My name is Rochelle Sobe, and I've lived in Peterborough, Ontario for the last number of years. Levi Schaefer was a man who lived in the city that I live in, a friend of mine, and the son of a very good friend of mine.
Can you tell me what happened to Levi?
So, in June of 2009, Levi, who was schizophrenic, took himself by bicycle to the furthest point, basically, you can go on land in Ontario, to the far north, to a place called Pickle Lake, and he was camping on Crown land and was killed by a police officer. After that, I really can't tell you anything about what happened, because the whole case that's kind of in play relies on the problem of police officers' notes not being trustworthy to disclose what did occur in the last moments of Levi's life.
Can you tell me about the process that the police go through with these notes that give them this quality of not being trustworthy?
So the Police Services Act, which is the act that provides for rules around policing in Ontario, makes very, very clear that officers' notes must be written independently, so without consulting with anyone else, and contemporaneously, so as soon as possible after the fact. And the reason this is so important is because that police officer's notes provide the foundation for evidence used in court, provides the foundation for investigations, how far they go, and the rest of it. And officers themselves act as state witnesses in our courts of law. The other reason these notes are so important, though, is that they provide the tools from which the oversight body, in Ontario's case, the Special Investigations Unit, who looks at incidences where police officers have been involved in an alleged sexual assault, a case of grievous bodily harm, or in cases like Levi Schaefer's, the death of a member of the public. So when those police officers' notes are not reliable, and in this particular case what happened was that the civilian oversight body brought to light in the case of Levi Schaefer's death that the notes that he received from police officers were not trustworthy because they had, in fact, been vetted by Ontario Provincial Police Association lawyers. So instead of the officers involved in Levi's death writing their notes right afterwards, handing them in so that all the bodies who might need to use them could do so reliably, they actually held off on writing their notes for a couple days, went, and every single officer in any way involved in the case went and saw the same OPPA lawyer who looked over everybody's notes, and only then were they handed over to the oversight body. So as much as it's difficult when somebody you love is killed by police, this case has become something much bigger than any of us who grieve a loved one ever thought it would be, because it just happened to be the right case study to bring to light a very long standing tension between the civilian oversight body, the police themselves, and accountability for the public.
How did this method of vetting notes affect the external investigation of the police in Levi's case?
So in the case of Levi Schaefer's death, the director of the Special Investigations Unit, who normally will take a look at all the evidence gathered by his investigators and decide whether or not an officer is quote-unquote criminally culpable of any particular act. He came out and was very clear that there were a lot of things that didn't quite make sense or add up around the evidence before him, but that essentially he couldn't actually trust it because no matter what was in the content of those notes, he himself, as the head of the civilian oversight body, knew that those notes had been looked at by this third party, this Ontario Provincial Police Association lawyer, and that because of that, the notes were not truly independent, and the notes, by all means, were not written contemporaneously. Throwing into question their trustworthiness also throws into question every possible proceeding that would stem from those notes, including the investigation into what happened in the last moments of somebody's life.
Levi's family, friends, and supporters brought this to court on a provincial level. Can you tell me what happened then?
So in 2009, the Schaefer and Minty families, the Minty's also lost their son that same year in similarly bizarre circumstances, went to Ontario's courts and asked for a judicial interpretation of the law, for the courts to look at the law that was already on the books and decide whether this action of police getting their notes vetted by lawyers was or was not permitted by law. And so that went through courts for a number of years, and in November 2011, the families won a unanimous decision at Ontario's highest court, where the justices on the bench were very, very clear that, of course, officers had a right, a constitutional right, to talk to their lawyers, but in fact, they could not postpone writing their notes, and they could not postpone accurately reporting what had happened in the line of their day as a public officer until after that had happened, or else the very justice system and its reliance on these notes as the evidentiary basis would be called into question. So we got the unanimous decision. A month later, the Ombudsman of Ontario actually brought us to Queen's Park and let out a report called Oversight Undermined, where he himself not only pointed fingers to police for sort of obstructing the proper flow of justice, but the ministries involved with police for, in fact, making it as difficult as possible for the civilian oversight body to do its job, where the Attorney General of Ontario actually asked the director of the Special Investigations Unit not to publish their report and not to bring to light the fact that over one-third of cases where the SIU had sent a note or whatever to police officers that they didn't even respond. And so we were very, very happy to have this unanimous decision and have this sort of backing from the Ombudsman. And a month later, we received notice that the police interests were wanting, regardless of the unanimous decision, to take two grieving families that last step. So it's not, in fact, the families that are taking the police to the Supreme Court at this juncture. We will be in court tomorrow because the police have decided that they are unsatisfied with the unanimous decision made by Ontario's highest court.
So they're appealing this decision, saying what? What is their appeal and what is their defense?
Their argument is very short and brief, and it simply relies upon the idea that the decision puts them in an unworkable position. They have, since the beginning of these proceedings, thrown up what I would regard as constant red herrings, consistently bringing it back to this idea of, these horrible families don't want police officers to have their constitutional right to a lawyer. And there is a difference if you are somebody who is being singled out as an officer who may have been, involved in something if you have accusations against you. But all the witness officers, all the people who aren't up against, any particular charges, have an overarching duty to actually report what they really witnessed and have an overarching duty to the public interest and not their private interest, whether that's their own skin, their brothers in blue, so to speak, or the force that they work for. And the court made that very, very clear. What has been argued on our end and what was in fact in the decision by Ontario's highest court is it's not that officers don't have a right to a lawyer. They just don't have a right to jump their public duty to protect themselves. So if you and I witnessed an accident, of course we could call our lawyer at any time, but we can't actually wait 4 days to tell the officer what we saw happen at the accident. We have to bear witness. So the role of a witnessing officer and the role of subject officer are very different, and that the fact that officers are officers should not just give them this blanket ability to sort of rewrite their notes and position themselves in a place that allows for themselves to, meet their own interests and not their overarching duty to the public, because they are public employees and we do pay them and they do work for the people.
What is the role of the families tomorrow at court?
The families are simply there as participants. Our lawyer, like everyone else in the court, will have their brief amount of time. Things go very, precisely at Supreme Court. And our defense lawyers, rather, are simply going to say, for the most part, that the decision made at Ontario's highest court was right. It was unanimous, and that they believe that it absolutely is workable for police to have to follow the law that's been on the books for a very long time.
What is your hope that will come out of the Supreme Court case?
I am very much hoping, and the families that I've worked with are very much hoping, that the Supreme Court of Canada will uphold the firm and unanimous decision made at Ontario's highest court and make it firmly clear to all policing bodies across Canada that they are to uphold the highest letter of the law, and that accountability measures with actual checks and balances and things like consequences for not, going along with the plan and the law be in place to ensure that the public that pays for police to do their job are actually being served and protected. So that's the tagline. It's absolutely ridiculous that with all the mechanisms provided by the state to allow for accountability over the years, there's been, dozens of reports put out by different courts and different levels of government and whatnot, and that these are all issues that the state itself has been very, very clear are problems. It's been identified ad nauseum, and yet it's been left to two families who, lost their sons and didn't understand what happened to push this. And so because of that, they have had to go through a very long battle that's included, selling whatever they have and trying to figure out a way to pay for it. And so the public interest here is not being very well served. And so as often that is the case. And so we've been doing a fundraising campaign for 3.5 years. We have an Indiegogo campaign rocking right now. And whether, it's a small donation or a large one, that shows solidarity, that the public actually does see this as something that matters to them, shows a lot of solidarity to the families.
Probably working on this campaign, you guys have heard from many other families and individuals who have either experienced death or abuse through police. And how widespread or common do you think this practice of the note vetting is among police in Ontario and in Canada in general?
It's blown my mind over the last couple of years how many different people have, made it clear from their own stories and their own backgrounds that this little issue of police notes, which kind of sounds dry, is actually a really, really big thing. So, like, people, having notes withheld from being written for way longer than they were in this case. In the case of the other man, Douglas Minty, the SIU wasn't called for a very, very long time. So these are systemic patterns within a broken system, and they keep reoccurring and really do affect, a great abundance of the cases that are out there. And especially when we're talking about issues around police violence, police brutality, these issues often disproportionately affect already marginalized communities who are often not in a great position to sort of push back and fight back, and often not necessarily in a position to, have the solidarity base necessary to kind of bring these things to light. So we've had a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds who have had their own stories approach us and share their stories, but also give thanks to the Schaefer and Minty families for pushing this through, because it has affected a lot of communities.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cheers.